it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Super interested in the Pac-12 football schedule, which should be out later this week. Rob Mullins, University of Oregon's athletic director, joining us now. How interested are you in getting eyes on that schedule?
I'm very interested, just like the fans. I can't wait to get some eyes on it and see what it looks like.
What input will the ADs get?
The way it typically works, for this year, Merton Hanks, who's the senior football person at the Pac-12, will work with the leadership at the Pac-12 to put together a schedule. We know we're going to play our five divisional opponents, and it'll be interesting to see who our crossover opponent is from the South. But they'll create a couple of models, most likely, and then share them with us, and then we'll have some input as ADs, and ultimately the ADs will vote on one after we have some input.
When you say input, like will you sit with Mario Cristobal and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? Or how much strategy?
Yeah, well, it just will depend on the timing. Obviously, this is a shortened timeline, so I don't know how much time we'll have for that. But I certainly would love to get his input. But scheduling's an imperfect science. You're not going to please everybody, and given that there's six games and only one crossover opponent, I think that's going to be even more difficult. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be successful if everybody's equally unhappy.
I like that. You've not only been on the playoff committee, you were the chair of the committee. This is going to be a weird year with seven games here and maybe 8, 9, 10 games elsewhere. They're going to have their work cut out for them. How will the committee, in your opinion, approach it, or how should they approach looking at the four best teams?
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a unique year because we're going to have some games that don't happen, and obviously the quantity of games played is going to be different. And I think the committee's had to deal with this before. There have been, although in much, much smaller numbers, games canceled, and obviously you have the debate of how many conference games and what's the strength of your schedule. But the committee's charge, when you boil it all down, is to pick the four best teams. That might be a little more difficult in that, there aren't going to be as many non-conference games where you can determine strength. But at the end of the day, they're going to have the data. They're going to watch all of the games. And you really, if you only have seven games, you better be putting your best foot forward every single time to get into that conversation. And I trust the committee. They're going to stick to the protocol that's worked. You're going to have to prove, maybe with a smaller sample, that you are one of the best four teams to get into that playoff.
Rob Mullins with us, University of Oregon athletic director. I don't like 9 a.m. kickoffs, 10 a.m. kickoffs. You know what I'm going to ask you. You already said you're not raising your hand. Are you also keeping your eyes down like an elementary school kid who doesn't have the answer?
Yes, exactly. No, I mean, obviously we explored this. When Fox opened up that window, it's a great window. Obviously the ratings, Fox has put a lot of assets behind it to really make it work. It's done great numbers. But for us, when I had the conversations with the staff, obviously the fans, last year no one was interested in it. But the thing that moved the needle for me was having a conversation with student athletes. And when they start calculating what a game day looks like, and what time that would mean they'd have to get up and pregame meal, there wasn't a whole lot of interest there. So, listen, I appreciate that the Pac-12 may be able to explore that, and it could be a good window for our league to get some much-needed early recognition. It's not one that we're real interested in.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that. I don't like the precedent either, even though there's not going to be fans tailgating and stuff this year. I just don't like starting something like that. What about rivalry games? Do you expect them to still fall at the end or near the end of the regular season schedule?
You know, not necessarily. Again, this is a unique year. We're going to have to make a lot of things fit. For me, traditionally, I'd love for it to be at the end because I'm a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to that. But, you know, I think we all have to be flexible and adaptable this year in a lot of ways, and that'll probably be one of them. I don't know that they'll all be played in the same week. They could be scattered throughout the schedule. It'll be interesting to see when we get the first drafts. But I think it'll be difficult.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard. I'm just glad that you'll have some games and that you guys feel that you will be safe doing so. I want to talk about that. Do you have sort of a protocol that is already in place for testing, and how comfortable are you that you keep your coaches and players safe?
So we're very comfortable. Obviously, we wouldn't be moving forward if we didn't think that we had the health and safety set up, obviously, from the Pac-12 Medical Advisory Group, our own medical team. We've done a number of educational sessions with our student athletes and our staff. You know, in the summer, John, we had a very good rhythm when we were onboarding folks and when we were in that 8 or 9 weeks of training. But once the Pac-12 decided to postpone and we broke, obviously what brought us back was the fact the Pac-12 was able to do the deal with Quidel to get daily testing. So we're in that process now. So we had great protocols, and now we get to add this other element of daily testing, which provides another step to ensure the health and safety of our student athletes. And our team, you know, we just got the machines end of last week. You got to get those machines certified. We've gone through that process, and now we're in the process of training our staff that'll be running those machines. It's a little more complex than people think. It is daily testing. It is rapid response. But, you know, there is some training involved, some certification involved, and we want to make sure that we have every I dotted and every T crossed so that we're able to execute that when we say go.
They say no fans at the beginning of that release last week, but, you know, a lot of that may have to do with, if I understand that right, is it state and county guidelines? Could there potentially be fans or more people in the stadium or a band at the end of the year?
No, the initial direction from the Pac-12 presidents and chancellors was no fans. There may be a window to allow some student athlete families in, but that will be under the guidance of local and state health authorities. So again, we'll revisit this January 1 as we move into the second part of the basketball season. But in the short term, the only opportunity we have to explore anything at this point may be the families of student athletes.
Rob Mullins with us, Oregon Athletic Director. How important was playing in the fall to preserving 2021, spring football, getting back on rhythm and back on track?
The fall of 21 was the priority, preserving that. I mean, that's always been on the radar. I mean, health and safety first and foremost. And when you talk specifically about football, it was doing everything that we can to preserve the fall of 21. So those were kind of two driving forces. And as you heard President Schill say when they made the announcement last week, you know, the move to fall with the November 7th start was very, very important to us if we could do it in a safe manner. And fortunately, with the Quidel testing and the other things, we were able to move forward with that. So, you know, it enables us to play a six-game schedule plus one, hopefully in the conference championship game, and then kind of get right back on schedule in pointing towards the fall of 21 of being a quote-unquote normal fall, whatever that looks like.
I know you were modeling a variety of different possibilities, but you end up with, you know, essentially seven games and then a bowl game at the end or a playoff at the end. What does seven games mean to the University of Oregon's athletic department budget?
We're still waiting to see what that is. In the end, if we're going to have no fans, obviously, you know, a big chunk of the revenue we lost was from ticket sales and donations tied to those tickets in Autzen Stadium. So, you know, that doesn't come back in any way, shape, or form. The opportunities exist really around, you know, where do the Pac-12 games get placed? You know, if we can get them on ABC, ESPN, and Fox networks, obviously that carries, those tier one rights carry a little more value. So for us, you know, as we talked about last time I was on, we were going to be in the range of 50 to 80 million lost this might save us and get us more towards the midpoint or even a little less than that, which, you know, if you can get another $8, $10 million, that's helpful, no doubt. Yeah. But we still have a big gap that we have to figure out. Probably for us now, we're probably talking in the $65 million range.
We look back on this 15 years from now. How do you think this time period will have affected college athletics or the way that athletic departments run?
Boy, that's a great question, because there are so many things happening, John, beyond just dealing with the pandemic and the financial challenges that come with the pandemic. You know, we're all dealing with the fight for social justice and equality. You're also dealing with, you know, Congress getting involved with the Student Athlete Bill of Rights. We're looking at name, image, and likeness. You know, there are a lot of major issues on the table for college athletics. I don't know that I could even predict what it'll look like three years from now, let alone 15 years from now.
Do you think the era of coaching salaries and facility improvements is that going to be affected, or is that too big a swing?
Boy, you know, you always think it is, John, because I'm not sure that this model's sustainable. But when you look back, I've been doing this for 25 years, and even talking to folks that were doing it before that, that's always been an issue, right? Is this sustainable? And here we are. And, you know, it's interesting. We're always, you know, as athletic directors, we're in this interesting position because, you know, we do get this pushback on coaches' salaries, for example, or the arms race on facilities. Yet the second you can't retain a successful coach, yeah, because of the contract, you get criticized for it as well. So we kind of get the shrapnel from both sides. So I do think we're heading down a path where it's hard to see it being sustainable at the same rate. However, you know, I'm also kind of a student of history and said that's been there before and we're still there.
Basketball, you know, everyone's focused on football, but you've got a couple of basketball programs that have an awful lot of interest. How complete or how, you know, start to finish will those seasons feel as the schedule gets filled out?
Yeah, you know, that one has a chance to feel a little more complete. You know, again, we're very happy with the seven football games, given where we started and how far we've come, and there's a lot of energy around that. You know, basketball with the NCAA moving the first game date back to November 25th gives us a chance, to play a full conference schedule and also look at the potential to play a few additional games. So, you know, if you can get into, you know, that 25-game range on the men's and women's side in total, that is going to feel like a complete season and hope, you know, that we can have a conference championship and get to March Madness.
University of Oregon Athletic Director Rob Mullins with us. You mentioned last time you were on that you go for a run in the morning and you'd bump into Mario Cristobal, who'd be out on a walk. Well, I said to Cristobal, I said, hey, I hear you're walking in the morning and Rob Mullins is out for a run. He runs into you. And what do you think Mario Cristobal took from that? He said, oh, I'm out walking because I'm making phone calls. I like to sprint. Rob likes to jog. He like was taking offense at the fact that he was walking. And I was like, come on, man. You're up at 6 in the morning. That's got to be weird to run into your football coach while you're out jogging.
Yeah, but there you go. That's what makes him so successful, right? That competitive nature. Fortunately, we were going in different directions and we met. It wasn't like I ran up behind him and he started running faster to get away from me and I had to sprint a little bit at the end of my run. But yeah, it's, you know, that's part of living in a college town. That's why I love Eugene. That's why we've always been attracted to college towns, is just that energy, that connection. You see folks, you get to go Ducks. You get a high, well, not a high five. You get an elbow bump now.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the beauty of being in Eugene, Oregon.
Let me ask you. You know, when you start out, you come out of college, and you know you're eyeing athletics. Did you think athletic director? Did you look at Oregon? Like, was there a goal in mind when you left the college campus as a student?
Well, I didn't start in college athletics, but once I decided to go back to get my master's degree and head down this path, the goal was certainly to be an athletic director. And though I didn't have it narrowed by school, you know, I had eventually met my wife, who was from the West Coast, which was a great driver. And for me, it's always been able to challenge yourself at the highest level and about fit, you know, a place where there's passionate fans, there's resources, and there's an ability to kind of make a difference in the program's trajectory, make a difference in young people's lives. And, you know, we've found everything and more that we could ever have wanted here at the University of Oregon.
You were, your background initially was in business, right? I mean, you were, your degree.
Yeah, I started out at Ernst & Young. I worked at an accounting firm in North Carolina coming out. Yeah, that was where I got my start.
Isn't that interesting, though, how you kind of marry together the passions, and you still probably use the same skills that you had there now?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a great learning experience, because when you work at a firm of that size, and I was on the audit side, I was able to work on a lot of different clients in a lot of different sectors, meet a lot of different people with a lot of different styles, be on teams with a lot of different people, and, you know, looking back, it was an incredible learning experience, and hopefully I'm still putting some of those learnings to use today.
All right, so schedule's going to come out, you guys, or at least you guys are going to get a peek at it. You'll give some feedback, then it will be released. Have you been impressed with sort of the mindset of the typical University of Oregon donor or fan who is now more than ever saying, hey, I know I'm important to this university, and I'm sticking with them even though I'm not going to be in the stadium? Or what feedback are you getting?
Yeah, no, listen, we would love to have all of them back in Autzen Stadium. Unfortunately, that's just not a reality for this year. But our fans have been incredibly supportive. Again, they align with the priority to make sure that we're supporting the student-athletes. And I think they all understand how much our student-athletes want this. And, you know, their part in helping them get to that is extremely important to them. So the support's been unbelievable. And, listen, we all want to get back to when we can gather again and cheer and sing shout and see the motorcycle lead the team out. And hopefully we'll get back to that in the fall of 21.
Now, I noticed Jen Cohen, the AD at Washington, kind of took a little good-natured barb at you. And she said, you know, no bye week for Oregon in front of our game, 7 games in 7 weeks. I think she does a heck of a job. I think you guys all do. The athletic directors across the conference are all great. But I just thought that was interesting that that's what, you know, where her mind was, or the Washington fans' mind is, and the schedule. I'd love to see you in Washington in week one.
Yeah, listen, that's a great rivalry. There's no doubt. You know, again, it's there's meeting everybody's desire and scheduling is difficult. But in the end, over a 10, 12, 14-year period, it kind of all equals out with those kind of things. Bye weeks are always the most difficult in the conference trying to create the schedule, but there aren't going to be any bye weeks set at the beginning this year. So we all won't have to fight that battle.
Did she really call you, or was she just saying she called you to say there's not going to be a bye week?
We were actually on a Zoom, and she did joke about that, and we all got a good chuckle out of it. And I said maybe I could propose a different schedule that gave us a chance to sneak in a bye week.
I love that. Rob Mullins, hey, I appreciate you, and thanks for connecting with your fan base and our audience.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. There he is, athletic director at the University of Oregon. Good stuff from Rob Mullins. Dissect that. If you are a family member of a player, it's a chance you could get inside of a Pac-12 stadium this season. I think that's coming down the pipeline. Again, it's subject to state and local guidelines. You'd have to get the Oregon Health Authority, the governor in Oregon, to sort of sign off on having an expanded audience inside the stadium or give an exemption for that. I think there's a lot of that stuff that's going to happen. I think it's foolish to think that we're going to end up, you know, 2 months from now where we are today. That is, if we've learned anything in this pandemic, it is that everything is fluid, everything is flexible. I would not be surprised to see some family members of players in the stands. I will not be surprised to see the potential for college basketball to include cheerleaders or stunt teams or even a band and maybe some limited fans. I think that all this stuff is on the table as they sort of figure out what is everybody doing and what is safe. Big takeaways. Judah Newby, Alabama Adriana. You heard Rob Mullins. Is there anything in the Mullins interview that jumped out at you guys?
His trust in the committee. I know he's got relationships there on the college football playoff side. So, you know, they don't really seem all that worried about an undefeated team not being considered. And maybe that's partly because they just saw the chaos that happened over the weekend. But if you're a Duck fan, I think that you should be put at ease a little bit on the college football playoff side of things. If you go 7-0, win this conference, I think you have a better shot than we thought last week to get into the playoff this year.
They have to start that discussion now, right? If you're going to sort of brand or position the Pac-12 as a viable candidate for the playoff, you cannot wait until week five of your seven-week season to start talking about it. I think Herm Edwards and Rob Mullins both talking publicly about the challenge of the committee, and especially Rob Mullins, who's been on that committee, that, hey, look, it's apples and oranges in a normal year. Like, you know, you can't control how many games we play or they play. We can just win our games. And they've got to pick the best four teams. They have to start the discussion now. Alabama, Adriana, what jumped out at you?
Well, I noticed some similarities in the questions that you were asking Scott from yesterday and Rob from today. And I just think it's so interesting the different answers that they give to very similar questions, because they're dealing with two very different programs. Yes. And I think it's a good sign that they're giving you different answers, because that means that they're being genuine and true to their program.
Yeah, and I think I feel like, you know, Scott Barnes' answers yesterday were, he's the first AD talking on a week in which they're trying to come up with a schedule. What I gathered from both of them is, finally, I've got two ADs now saying that they'll get eyes on the schedule. They'll give feedback. So if they don't like, you know, what the Pac-12 has done, I think they have a chance then to get the Pac-12 conference to kind of come off maybe a position. I know what television's going to want. Television's going to want big-time matchups in week one and week two, and they're going to want a big-time, like, let's get the Pac-12 splashing out there. But I don't know that Jimmy Lake at Washington's going to want to play Mario Cristobal in week one of the season. I don't know if Mario Cristobal is going to want to play a crossover game in week one of the season against, you know, Utah or USC. I kind of am leaning toward a Pac-12 conference schedule that attempts to preserve some of the Pac-12 contenders. I expect those crossover games to happen like week 3, 4, 5, right in there. Rivalry games kept on the same schedule as they've always been, last week before the championship weekend. I would expect Oregon and Oregon State to be playing in December. But I also think those crossover games, there's some gerrymandering that's available here to the Pac-12, and nobody would be wise to it. If you said, look, we want to cut down on travel, and we know we're going to have these division crossover games, but we're going to have the LA schools play the Arizona schools because they're closer. We're going to have the Bay Area schools play against the Oregon schools, and then we'll have the Mountain schools play against the Washington schools. So you get Colorado and Utah against Washington State. Well, I don't think putting I don't think putting Utah against Washington is in the best interest of the Pac-12. You match up and you marry Colorado and Washington, and you match up and you marry Utah with Washington State, and then you put your Pac-12 schools, the Bay Area schools, you have Stanford against Oregon and you have Cal against Oregon State, and then you have Arizona State play UCLA, and you have USC play Arizona, and in that way, I do think you end up with 6-0 versus 6-0 in the last week of the season, because you protect your contenders. There are six contenders, three in each division. Three, by the way, none in the same geographical footprint. I think it works for you. I'll take your phone calls. 503-417-7575. Leave it here. Take your phone calls. 503-417-7575. Let's go to Mark in Beaverton. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, John, so I want to get your opinion. Do you think that Oregon needs to, like, basically blow out everybody, and even more than that, create some sort of an ad campaign to, you know, give them more higher visibility in order to enhance their playoff chances, or do you think just on their record alone?
I think they're
going to go undefeated.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to be impressive on the field. I think, first of all, they're going to have to pass the eyeball test. Secondly, they're going to need validation from somebody in the South Division, Oregon, or whoever gets to the end as the conference champion. It's going to have to be validated. I think you need undefeated versus undefeated in the title game. I think you have to do some branding and marketing, and you have to start talking about the playoff way earlier than you would in a normal year. And I think Rob Mullins and Herm Edwards are doing a lot of that right now out front. I think there's going to be some gamesmanship here. It's a different year. You're going to have to change opinions, change minds, and you're going to have to change people's minds about the Pac-12 brand. It's going to have to be, we're great. We know the Pac-12.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.